This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting to you from Simon Fraser University's Burnaby campus in British Columbia.
Hello, and welcome to the Canadian Philosophy Show. I am your host for today. My name is Aaron Wang, and I am joined by my co-host, Brandon Brownlee and Hale Rotary. The topic I've chosen for today is democratic inputs to AI and how this links to media or technology theory. Technology is a concrete tool that humans use to improve their conditions. So there have been many examples of these tools. Some people consider fire a tool. Some people consider the wheel a tool. The domestication of animals can be considered tool-like behavior. Some people take this more abstract and they say that the invention of language and written language is a technology that has or even like verbal language and then speech has the words we create has dramatically affected human beings and humanity and our progress. Technology and media have a very close relationship with society and specifically with democratic societies, where communication between large numbers of people is the mechanism of government or a political organization. In recent months and years, AI chatbot technology, artificial intelligence chatbot technology, has taken a few leaps forward and gotten much better at communicating with human beings on a variety of topics. And this technology, essentially, the reason it's better is not because of some technical breakthrough. Most of the computer science methods and artificial intelligence methods that have been used for a while, at least in terms of the algorithms and design of those algorithms, those have been around for a while. What's different about this AI is that it was trained on basically all of the text on the internet. So it had a very, very, very large training data set that encompassed much more than previous chatbots. It learns more or less like a human brain does. And then it is able of learning against itself or challenging its own conceptions of things. I don't know everything about how this AI works. In fact, I know very, very little. So I will be moving away from the technical aspects quite soon. So I do want to talk a little bit about the research grants. So OpenAI, which has the organization which has created ChatGPT, has created a grant program of $1 million split into 10 $100,000 grants for the project of introducing democratic processes into their artificial intelligence system. So I'm just going to read a little bit from their article. By democratic process, we mean a process in which a broadly representative group of people exchange opinions, engage in deliberate discussions, and ultimately decide on an outcome via a transparent decision-making process. There are many ways such a process could be constructed. We encourage applicants to be innovative, building off of known methodologies and coming up with wholly new approaches. Just to give you a little bit of an idea of what they think this might look like, they have an example where someone is participating in a large deliberation. The question is, how far do you think personalization of AI assistants like ChatGPT, how far do you think personalization of AI chat assistants like ChatGPT should align to a user's tastes and preferences? Are there any boundaries, if any, what should exist in this process? So then it says like ChatGPT could use a plugin to retrieve statements from other participants. AI would then help participants understand the opinions of other people. AI can ensure the same arguments are not recycled. AI can help with brainstorming these ideas, and then as time passes, users can cast their votes on the proposed statement. Eventually, the statement gains widespread approval. So this is a very interesting, but also a very challenging time for artificial intelligence and society. The moment that we're living in is a moment where people are seriously starting to question the trade-off between the ethics and the future benefits of AI. And this also includes some of the somewhat standard critiques of capitalism or corporations that engage in profit-seeking, corporate greed, rent-seeking. So the financial or profit motive of these companies is being considered. Do they have the public interest at heart? Many of them say they do and are working very, very hard to try to show the public their principles, their values, and to engage with the public on these ideas. But we don't really have a mechanism for controlling these technologies and the people who produce these technologies. We don't really have guidelines on the development of AI. And some people see that as a major problem. They think that this field should be better regulated or should be subject to some kind of oversight. Recently, there was a congressional hearing in the United States where it was suggested that a federal agency might be created that would be able to consult with experts and to be flexible on both with oversight and with rules, because it's hard to say how much AI will advance and how quickly. I do also want to mention here that artificial intelligence systems come in a wide array of forms. Most people are somewhat unaware that they use artificial intelligence systems all the time. It really just depends on how broad or how narrow you want to define artificial intelligence. Google search can be considered a version of artificial intelligence. Another that is not quite artificial intelligence, you might call it more algorithmic intelligence. In other words, something that has a stated process to follow but doesn't have any human-like learning capability would be the YouTube recommendation algorithm. That's something that has been heavily worked on by hundreds of people using billions of users of data to be refined as a system. So that's something that you could say is very algorithmically intelligent in what it does, but it wouldn't necessarily represent artificial intelligence because human beings are still programming a lot of the variables and metrics directly into how it behaves. And the reward algorithms that YouTube uses are not self-learning algorithms. To just get a little bit into this, and I want to open the floor to discussion, but I think it's worth diving into this a little bit more. What do I mean by a self-learning algorithm? So an example of this type of algorithm would be DeepMind's AlphaGo or AlphaGo Zero. So these AI systems were developed to play strategic games, such as the game of Go, which is popular in China and Japan, the game of chess, which is popular in Europe, the game of Shogi, which is also popular in Japan. And these AI systems can play these games at a very, 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 very high professional level. They've beaten the world masters, in fact, in some games. AlphaGo famously beat Lee Sedol, who is the highest, one of basically the highest ranking Go player in the world. And he's very, very, very creative. It's hard to explain how good he is at Go. And Go is played on a 19x19 grid rather than a 8x8 grid, such as normal chess. So many people thought that artificial intelligence would not be able to cope with Go as a board game, and it wouldn't be able to learn how to play this game. So an artificial intelligence system was created to play this game. How it worked was not by finding out all possible moves and kind of backtracing from a victory state, as previous chess algorithms work, but rather by identifying possible win states and possible lose states. So it didn't evaluate all possible complexities and intricacies of the board. And the later versions of these algorithms were just given the rules of the game and then played against themselves. So when I talk about a self-learning algorithm, that's an example, an algorithm that can generate its own play or experience of the game and learn from that experience. Now, ChatGPT as a model is not really designed to do that type of thing. It's somewhat designed to do that, but human language is very, very, very different than a strategic game. In a strategic game, you can define things like absolutely, such as perfect information and rules. And these are things always exist, and they're very standardized, and you never have to worry that when, you know, someone puts a piece on the board in a certain position that they might be lying to you, or you might be misinterpreting their move. Everything is very clear, and it can be made objectively clear. Human language is not like a strategic game. It's open to interpretation. There are multiple ways of interpreting words, multiple ways of using words, the style, the multiple styles of language. And that becomes a real challenge in computer science, where we don't know how to create a system that doesn't objectively understand something. And so there have been a lot of different attempts. This is a field within computer science called natural language processing. I'm not going to get into all of the details there. Suffice it to say that an artificial intelligence system like AlphaGo is not currently available that can learn against itself, so to speak, and generate new experiences and information to the same extent as ChatGPT. People are concerned about that type of development. They're concerned of AI becoming better and better and the effects that will have on society, and I think rightly so.
Right now, this is kind of the apex of media and technologies, AI, you know, something like this would have been unimaginable even 5 or 10 years ago, but here it is. So this is not only philosophically very interesting, but incredibly relevant. One of the things I noticed, or when you were speaking, was that you said that there weren't a lot of guidelines right now. And that seemed to just be a function of the fact that, again, this is a novel technology that seems to be the product or the consequence of any novelty is there's no precedent for this. And if our laws or guidelines are largely based on precedent, well, then we're just not going to have the guidelines for this. It's a viable project of, you can start from thinking about, well, what are the kind of natural laws or the technical limits of this? Like, what does it actually do? I find when I listen to people talk about AI, discussions around that tend to be about the technical limitations. And they say, well, right now it can't do this, but later on it might be able to do this. I don't know if things like technical discussions about what things are capable of are all that illuminating in discussions about this, because again, to go back to what we just noticed, this is completely new. We wouldn't have anticipated something like this 10 years ago, maybe, or, you know, maybe barring science fiction. So that's kind of I don't want to call it an experimental proof, but a kind of proof that, well, these limitations will be overcome. You can tend to, we can reasonably expect that anything like a technical limitation, like the AI is too slow or it has resource, costs, or it might only be accessible to some people, but not to other, but in the future, it'll be accessible to other people. In discussions of that, that doesn't seem to touch on what we've been discussing in the show, which is things like the structure of the media itself. We can accept that those technical limitations will be overcome. Technology is just constantly progressing for better or for worse. We will be able to use, everyone will be able to use this at some point. And it seems a bit speculative and it even seems a bit divinatory, but I mean, again, that's kind of the position we're in. We didn't see this stuff coming, and now it's here, and now we got to deal with it. We should probably deal with things that we don't expect. Expect the unexpected in a way. And that means this stuff could really blow up. This stuff could be in everyone's pocket, just like the phone. In service of saying that if we're going to think about AI technology, I think that one thing we can kind of set aside, unless the technical limitations actually do impact the structure of the media, the way it's used, the way it impacts our own experiences, the way it impacts our institutions, the way it changes our practices, the way it changes our view of the world, actually kind of sculpts our form of life, as it were. I think that that's what we want to focus on in these discussions. I make a big point of it because it just seems so many discussions get bogged down by the limitations, which will be overcome, you know, tomorrow anyway. I guess I just wanted to emphasize that point. That seems to be, if I had to bring anything to this discussion, it would be pay attention to what actually matters in this discussion.
As I was listening to both of you speak, you know, I had some things come to my mind. And first of all, I want to say I am not any kind of tech AI guru. I think this is part of the problem with so many of these discussions. I have no idea how AI works. I don't even know how my computer works, just to be honest. And I think, and I say that because I think I represent the vast, vast majority of the public, even though this has become such a big topic in public discourse, and it's something that I've talked about before. I think, Brandon, you and I even talked about it on a separate show at some degree. But at the end of the day, like, Aaron, I think you're by far the individual here has the best grasp of what the technicalities are. And even then, it's like, you know, it's a deeply complex issue. Although I really, my thinking really drove from two parts of the discussion that came up. First of all, I really liked, Aaron, how you talked about this, a certain kind of AI being effectively tactical, in that you give it a set of, you know, inputs, rules, and you say, okay, well, here's the scope of what you're dealing with now, and here's the goal within the context of this scope and all these the pieces within that, like, figure out basically the best way to get to your goal. And I think that's a really interesting way of thinking about it. But then it also relates a little bit to what we're talking about in terms of limitations. And I guess this is more just me pondering, wondering a little bit in terms of, we're going to talk a little bit, obviously, about AI within the context of political discourse and political efficacy, essentially. And the thing about, you know, I think politics as well, a lot of people who operate in the overtly political sphere treat it in a tactical kind of way. Really, it's a practice and it's a kind of immersion. And really, politics is just communal life. Like, it's us living together and figuring out how we're going to do that. And so I think that it's one thing to, I guess where I go with this, and I'll let Aaron hear from here, that makes me wonder, like, to what degree does something like that maybe isn't so, and I think this relates a little bit to what you were talking about with the issues with language, where it becomes a much more kind of open and fluid and actually a lot less rule and generality based, because we are really just dealing with, you know, everyone's lives in a communal setting. And they're like, how do we understand the rules within that? Even if we're just building something, a kind of AI that's supposed to help us politically operate more efficiently, essentially. Even then it's like, okay, well, how, I guess to me, I immediately think this is a lot more of a layered problem than, say, chess or Go or some kind of game, which AI is already, you know, so well known for. So I'm really interested to see kind of what we're thinking here and kind of how this might actually play out potentially.
So there's definitely a lot to discuss there. I think I'm going to start with a little bit more on the way they're structuring the system, or more specifically, the way they want to adapt this system after they get the responses from these prototype grant proposals. So the application review factors are evaluation, so establishing metrics for such as participant satisfaction, shifts in polarization, scalability, other relevant indicators, and to invent new metrics for a healthy democratic process. So we might talk about that a little bit. What kind of metrics would you be looking for in a healthy democratic process? The next one is robustness, measures to prevent or address inappropriate behavior, such as trolling or fake accounts. Inclusiveness and representatives, and representativeness, strategies for including individuals from diverse backgrounds and levels of familiarity with AI systems in the democratic process. So this is, I think, a very important note, and Hale brought it up a lot in his point, that the vast majority of people don't know what to do with this technology yet. And so how do we want to train users to adopt this technology? How do we want to do that in a manner which is ethical? I don't remember which show that we talked about this, but I remember we had a show where we very specifically stated in no uncertain terms that ethical behavior should not ever be reduced to simple rule following. That as much as rule following is good for approximating ethical behavior, understanding and having the critical thinking of what makes behavior good and not good is just really important beyond following specific rules. Because if you end up in a situation where there is no rule for it, how are you going to know what to do if you don't have ethical principles or critical thinking behind it? I'll just read through the last few a little bit quickly. Empowerment of minority opinions, ensuring that unpopular or minority opinions are heard, and providing smaller groups the opportunity to influence matters of significant concern to them. Next is effective moderation, addressing challenges in moderation, including ensuring diverse representation of viewpoints, distinguishing valuable contributions from off-topic comments, and preventing moderation biases from influencing the process. Next is scalability. We emphasize the scalable processes that can be conducted virtually. So I'm not going to read the rest of this because I think that's a little bit too technical. So essentially, scalability means this should work equally well with 10 people or a million people. While that seems like it's impossible, there are actually computer systems that have that capability. So how do we design AI to deal with large groups of people in democratic processes? There's two more here, which is actionability, the degree of actionability of the information elicited by the deliberation process. So if you have a democratic process in AI, how is that supposed to be used? How should it not be used? Should it be something, if we correct democratic information through this artificial intelligence system, should that be considered as reliable as polling information from polling companies and journalists and other companies such as that? And the last one is legal ability, how easy it is. Sorry, legible. It should be legal ability. Just kidding. It's legibility. How easy it is to understand and trust the process. So legal ability is not actually one of the factors here. So no one's asking whether or not this is legal. There are no laws against this type of thing at the moment. I do have a few cue card notes. So here are my few notes. And that's that first, we have to consider whether or not these project goals could be considered flawed in some manner. So are they missing pieces? Do they have potentially incomplete definitions? So in computer science, if you have flawed goals for your agent, it can cause a whole bunch of a very strange behavior. The most common type of behavior is kind of the stop button example. So you design an AI system and you want it to achieve a goal, but you also want to reward it for stopping when it's supposed to. So you give it a stop button and you give your reward algorithm +1 points whenever it hits the stop button. Well, if that's your algorithm, and then +10 points, you might say, for getting the goal. Well, if that's your algorithm, hitting the stop button is infinitely easier than reaching the goal. So most agents, when they have a reward algorithm like this, they'll just press the stop button forever because that will give them way, way, way more points, much easier than going towards the actual goal you want to measure towards. That's the kind of the problem of defining metrics. But the point here that I want to make is that if your project has flawed goals, or perhaps goals that cannot be understood before you create the system, then what you need to try to find is essentially perfect information or reliable information about what is actually happening in these processes. And you need a system that is adaptive and can take into account that information. And this is the last point that is key, with low time pressure. because if you have a high time pressure system, the most likely outcome is a bad result. Because as soon as people have to make decisions in very, very quick, strict time frames, especially if you imagine this is an AI system, those decisions might be made without thought. This is actually kind of another question here, which is that how long should the AI be thinking about different concepts? And of course, an AI doesn't think like a human being, but you can think about what kind of metrics might be a fair metric to think about. What type of, do we want the AI to have a human analogous level of thought when it interacts with humans and is kind of moderating democratic processes, kind of like the clerk moderates democratic processes in our parliament. Next, I wanted to make two observations, which is that the problems of today in the information age often fall into two main categories, and that is the inability to listen and the inability to think. So that is essentially the inability to comprehend ideas that are outside of your experience and the inability to rationalize those ideas into your experience and learn from them. And I think that this is often due that in the information age, we have access to more surplus information than any other time in history. So I know things about ancient history because of courses I took in university. I know things about places that I have never been to. I have talked to people via the internet that live in places that I have never been to. So I have all of these types of access. Also, like I have access to news sources, which are constantly telling me about things that I have no physical experience with. So when you add all of that information and people are asked to listen to that information and to think about that information, it creates a lot of real problems. And this is essentially the exact same problem that a large AI system will have when it is facilitating a democratic process, is an overabundance of information. So it has to sort that information and select for that information in an ethical manner. So that's how I am stating this. I'll just give a few two quotes and I'll open the floor back to some discussion. So I wanted to put an observation from Hayek's Constitution of Liberty, that most utopian projects fail because of the assumption of perfect information. So a lot of these AI systems are trying to be developed with ethical values. Some of them are a little bit utopian in scope, like the ideas for equality and equity in society. I'm not saying those are not goals that we should pursue as a society, just that the difficulty of pursuing those should not be underestimated. And so if an AI system assumes that equality is the goal that is worth searching for at all costs, if it's a really, really high priority goal, it might not adequately understand the costs of making that a high priority goal. So, and this is essentially the same thing as the stop button and goal example. So if I tell a computer that, you know, we need to make a good and better society and we need to find out how to do that. And so it goes and it collects information, it tries to make decisions, it collects surveys, it engages in these types of deliberate discussions, it collects information and comes back to me. And I ask it, like, well, what did you find out? And he said, well, I found out that we need an equitable and equal society, and these are the policies I should put in place. Well, what if I say, like, well, what about economic policy? What about foreign policy? What about our laws? And it says, well, like, those things are important, but equality is fundamentally the most important issue. And so, like, I have economic policies, but those are in terms of equality. So that's kind of in terms of how we structure values as human beings. That's some of the challenges here. I have another little thought here from Ruder Bergman, who wrote the book Utopia for Realists. And in that book, one of the things he talks about is that one of the things that makes a modern conception of utopia or a perfect society so difficult is that in the modern day, we don't lack
as many things as in prior ages. So if you look at early versions of Utopia, they're often places that are like made out of sweets and candy, because those were